You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Ryan's here with me. Hi, Ryan.
Howdy, Michael.
It's good to have you guys with me. Amanda Klutz is on the show. If you don't know her, very inspirational. She's on the talk. She has a crazy, inspiring, tragic story to tell. And it was really wonderful having her on the podcast. We'll get to that in just a minute. But I appreciate it. If you enjoy the podcast today and you're here for Amanda, I hope maybe you'll subscribe, write a review, and stick around because, you know, I think you'll like the show. Tell them about the handles. They could follow us on the Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
At Inside of You Pod on Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
That's correct. And if you want to, you can watch on YouTube. You could listen to the podcast pretty much everywhere and write a review. Tell us what you think. Also, I got merch on the Inside of You online store, Lex Luthor stuff, Smallville stuff, Inside of You stuff. Also, the band sunspin.com. You could book Zooms with me and Rob from the band, and you could book the band, and you can get a bunch of cool merch there, sunspin.com. And lastly, patreon.com. If you want to join the wonderful family that subscribes and gives a little more to the podcast, if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to help the podcast a little more, join Patreon. Just go to Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou, and I'll send you a message thanking you, and you can join the family, and there's a lot of goodies there. Yeah, thank you for watching the Stage It show last week. We had a great time, and it was nice seeing everybody out there and listening to us play music. Ryan, good week?
Yeah, okay week.
Yeah, not too shabs?
Not too shabs.
Did you leave that stuff we talked about in the podcast about COVID?
Yeah, I left the whole thing.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. It was a good conversation.
I think it was helpful.
I think it's helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think if anyone
it's also
out there-
talking about, like, you know, confronting, you know, things that might bother you. You know, we talked something through.
We did.
A little more so we understood each other.
We did. And I also thought it was helpful if anyone thinks they may or may not have the disease and, you know, what to sort of do about it. And this was sort of a situation. And I think it might help anyone out there who
doesn't exactly know what to do.
Doesn't know what to do.
Yeah.
In other words, might be confronted with that situation and how to handle it.
Yeah, exactly. If you're feeling sick or a little down, you're like, it's probably nothing. Go get tested. Go get tested. I mean, you just be careful. Let's just go right into this and stick around. We'll talk goodies. I read Patreon names, top tier patrons, and a bunch of other stuff. But right now, let's just get inside of the wonderful, beautiful Amanda Klutz.
It's my point of view. Listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
You're an inspiration. I read all your posts, which either make me cry or make me smile. The little boy Elvis is just to die for. He's the sweetest little thing I've ever seen in my life. And
Thank you.
And you've got this book out, Live Your Life. And obviously, I haven't read it yet. I'm a slow reader, but I assume it's about, I mean, do you lay everything pen to paper? Do you put everything out there? Like everything you could think of as dark as your mind gets, do you write it down? Or are there some things that you go, you know what, this is too much?
No, I really did. We wrote the honest story of exactly what happened. And I'm very honest about everything, about Nick and I's relationship, the highs and the lows, the everything that I went through at the hospital, the battles that we fought on a daily basis with the hospital, all of the things, it's all in there. And I think that's what's special about this book. For anyone that followed the story, you think you know the story because you were with me every day following it. But what you don't know is that, you know, oftentimes on social media, we share the tip of the iceberg and you're not seeing what is underneath the water.
Right. I mean, it's a lot and we'll get there. I want to get there, but I want to talk about like the Amanda Klutz before all this happened, before you got into the acting and were one of the hosts of the talk and wrote a book and went through all this, you know, drama, for lack of a better word again. But I mean, what was life like back? I mean, this sounds like a Stephen King title, Plain Township, Stark County, Ohio.
I know.
Is that where you're from?
Yeah.
What did you do in Plain Township? I don't even know what that means. Plain Township. It's a township that's plain in Stark County, Ohio.
you know, farms. And I mean, honestly, though, my neighborhood, it looks like a Norman Rockwell painting. It was beautiful, covered, tree-lined, covered streets. Dairy Queen at the corner, my elementary school at the corner. You walked to school. White picket fences, green grass. You know, we would be playing down the street and my dad would just do a huge whistle. And it was like, oh, time to go home. Dinner's ready. Gotta go.
Leave it to Beaver. It was Leave It to Beaver in a lot of ways.
It was Leave It to Beaver. Yes, it was.
Oh, my gosh.
Oftentimes, my mom and dad didn't even know where we were. I mean, we just had to hear the whistle and we knew it was time to come home for dinner.
So, I mean, growing up, did you have a pretty fun life? I mean, were your parents cool? Did you have good relationships with them?
Growing up was great. I have one brother, four sisters. Anna, my little sister who wrote the book with me, is 7 years younger. So when Anna was born, she was like our real life Barbie doll, our baby doll, not Barbie doll, baby doll. And we, you know, we were a big old happy family vacations. Wow. Every summer to Hilton Head Island, we'd all pile in the van, you know, Friday nights you're watching, you know, a movie that we all rented from Video Time, you know, ice cream parties, family dinner every night at 6 p.m., church every Sunday. I mean, it was...
What?
Yeah.
So most people either avoid that if they had such a great childhood, they don't like to share it. But, you know, the juxtaposition of, like, what you've gone through, it's really nice to know that you had this. I mean, that's a nice through line. I mean, well, you're backwards, but...
Oh my God. No, it's because of that I am the person I am today, that my family, you know, that my sister and brother came to rescue me at the time that they did, that, you know, we're each other's best friends. We really are. My mom and dad taught us to always put family first. And we really do. We love each other so much. If we could all live in the same block, we would.
I honestly, I'm sorry to say this, but I can't say the same for my family.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, Ryan, my engineer here, my buddy, he just saw his girlfriends. He went to see their family for like 9 days. And I got an anxiety attack from that. Do you understand? I love my family, but I can't last more than 2 days with them. It's just, there's a difference with us. It was highly dysfunctional growing up. It was sort of a mess. So I can understand why you could gravitate towards that. It's some normalcy. Real love. They listen to you. When you told them you wanted, I mean, what age did you want to go into entertainment and how did they respond?
I wrote an essay in sixth grade about wanting to be a Radio City Rockette and on Broadway. And then when I was in high school and I started doing the musicals in high school, that's when I was like, I think this is what I want to do. I took some good convincing though. My dad especially was like, you know, you should go to a 4-year college. And then if you really still believe that you want to do this, go to New York then. And I was like, you know, no, Dad, I have to go to New York now. And luckily got into AMDO, which is a 2-year musical theater conservatory. And he finally, my mom and my dad finally said, okay, you can do this. But just know that if it doesn't work out, the money for the 2 years that you're going to be spending in New York is this equivalent to the 4 years we spent on your brother and sisters. So after these 2 years, if nothing happens, you're on your own and you're 20 years old without a college degree. And I said, I don't care. I want to do this. And so they let me.
Because deep down, you knew they'd still help you.
I think yes, of course, but I also deep down knew that I was going to do it.
Right.
So I have an intuition like that.
So how long from the time you started this thing, this 2-year program, till you started to see some success and things started turning around a little bit? I mean, it happened pretty fast.
2 days before I graduated, I booked my first national tour of a Broadway show.
And what was that?
42nd Street.
2 days before it ended, you called your parents. And they're like, oh, 2 days left. She's got shit going on. There's nothing going on. And you got this. And they were they screaming on the phone?
Oh my gosh, of course. I saw 42nd Street 10 times in the front row, student tickets. I worked my butt off. I went to that audition twice before and got cut right away. It was the third time I auditioned for the show. I had worked really hard on my singing and my tap dancing, especially because that show was all tap. And so when I got that job, it was huge.
What's your thing? What would you rather do, sing or dance? Are you equally good at both of those?
No, I'm much more. I was trained as a dancer, and then I learned how to sing in college or, you know, at the conservatory. But I didn't actually really learn how to sing and use my voice until I was doing Broadway shows.
And when did the Broadway started to happen? When did that happen?
Well, 42nd Street was the Broadway national tour of the revival that was on Broadway at the time.
Right. So, and do those pay well, by the way? Are those like something that they make? How does that work?
Well, it just depends. Back in the day, you would die to get a Broadway show national tour because you would make Broadway salary, but then you would also make per diem on top of that. And if you were smart with your per diem, you could basically bank your salary and live off of like half of your per diem. So a lot of actors would prefer to be on a national tour because of those contracts. You could come home from a national tour and buy a home, you know, or buy an apartment. And then, you know, as the world changes, those contracts started getting kind of torn apart. And so the 42nd Street National Tour job that I got was the first of the, they called them the CETA contracts. And my salary was about an eighth of what an actual Broadway salary should have been. And our per diem was again about like a fourth of what it should have been. But I was 20. I didn't care. I was like, I would have done the job for free. I remember the first day that they said, paychecks are here. Come get your paycheck. I looked at my girlfriend. I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. We get paid. Like I completely forgot. I just was so happy to be there dancing.
Isn't it funny how it gets so jaded? The first thing we're saying is like, how much do I get for that now? We're not I'll just do it. I just want to act. I want to dance. Right? What happened? Now it's like, I mean, look, if the right job comes along.
What happens if you have a family and a house and a mortgage payment and car payments, and at 20, you're living in a college dorm or you're sharing an apartment with 10 people, so you don't have to worry about all that stuff.
By the way, I think I would be look, if Spielberg ever called or any of these big directors and said, we want you to do this part, I wouldn't care about money at all. I'm like, I'm in. I don't care. There's certain jobs you don't care about. But when you take most jobs, it's like, all right, I gotta pay for my mortgage here. I gotta do these. I gotta pay for my mom's mortgage. I gotta help my sister out. These are things that I have to do, by the way. When did your parents finally first see that show? How soon after you went on tour?
They came to quickly after we opened. We opened at Kansas City Starlight Theater, which is an outdoor amphitheater, very much similar to the Hollywood Bowl. And it was magical. But then like two cities later, we were in Cincinnati, Ohio. And because I'm from Ohio, that's where they first saw the show, drove down to Cincinnati and saw it there.
Did you get nervous? Do you get more nervous when people are there?
No, not my family. No, you know, if I am nervous, I'll get nervous a little bit before. But then once I'm on stage, it goes away immediately. Even no matter what I do, performing wise, it's always, if there's nerves, it's just right there in the, but that fuels my fire. I actually use it to help my adrenaline.
I bet your dad cried. I'd put all my money on it.
Oh, they all did. They all did.
They were all crying afterwards. They came up to you. Like, oh man, dude, we just knew it. Even though it was 2 days before you graduated, we knew it was going to happen. And we were going to help you if you didn't make it. You know that, right?
Yeah, that was a big day. I would say my dad and my mom probably teared up more so when I did the Radio City Rockettes, though, and they were at that opening night. That opening night for them was, you know, my dad still, no matter where we are, no matter what I do in my life, if we're sitting at a restaurant, he'll be like to the waitress, my daughter was a Radio City Rockette, you know. That's,
ooh,
you know.
I want to hear about that. First,
like, I could win an Oscar and he would still talk about, you know, his daughter that's a Radio City Rockette.
See, that's pretty sweet. You know, I remember doing theater in college and then after college was over in New York, like off Broadway, but I'm talking off like New Jersey Broadway. Wasn't really Broadway. But, you know, that little clique that they have, the green room clique, all those actors backstage, it's more drama than you can imagine. I'm sure you know that more than anyone. Yeah. Doesn't everybody just sleep with everybody on these tours? Did you experience that on these tours? Were people just banging everybody?
Oh, my God. what happens on tour stays on tour. It is a crazy life, and you are not too far from the truth, my friend.
Yeah, I assume. Were there any loves, though, that you kind of fell in love with, like, early on the Broadway circuit?
Well, I met both of my husbands in shows, but on Broadway shows. On tour, I never fell in love with anybody, but I saw a lot of relationships and a lot of people doing things they shouldn't be doing late at night. You know, tour is such a alternate lifestyle. You have no responsibilities. You are in these weird cities in hotel rooms, and you can sleep all day. The only thing you have to do is go to your show at night, and then the show ends and you have nothing to do but go to the bar next door and stay there way too long. And then past 2 a.m., things start happening that they shouldn't happen.
So, this is exactly why you guys out there listening, you always hear about these Hollywood, you read the tabloids, it's so much fun because everybody's cheating and all these big movie stars. It starts out at an early age. It starts out on tour. It starts out in the green room in college. You get a lot of alone time. A lot of, you know, I'm lonely. And you want to have fun. And you're
talent
young.
Talent is sexy. When you see somebody all of a sudden that you don't think is cute, get up there and like belt out a song and then go into a dance and then the audience applaud, you're like, wow, you know, he's cute. Why am I all of a sudden liking, you know, Matt?
Isn't that funny how people, like women, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, you like funny guys. You like or talented guys. So you see talent, even if you might not look at them on the street, if you didn't know them and you walk by and you'd be like, I wouldn't look twice at this guy. He gets up there and belts something out. Maria, I just met a girl. Right. And you just like, holy shit.
You know why? It shows vulnerability. It's like you're showing your soul, especially with, I think, anything live music, live theater. You know, you're being real and raw. There's like an honesty that you have to like get to and showcase. You know, you're crying in front of people. You're being brave in front of people. You're showing your different colors. I think that's what makes it attractive.
So when you were talking about a while ago, you said like in sixth grade or seventh grade that you wanted to be a Roxette. Was that right?
Mm-hmm.
You wrote this thing out saying, I want to be a Roxette at whatever years old. And now how old before you get your audition for the Roxettes? Roxette. Did I say, you know why? Because Roxette is one of my favorite 80s bands. And I keep saying it. Remember that song? She's got the look. What in the world can make a bright eye boy turn blue?
Oh, yeah, good song.
So not Roxette, the Rockettes.
Yeah, no, it's okay. yes, it's the Rockettes, yes. So the Rockettes, I have first auditioned for the Rockettes when I was going to school in New York. I auditioned for the national tour of the Rockettes because at the time there was the Radio City crew, and then there were Rockettes in all these other cities doing the Christmas show in St. Louis or in Columbus or Chicago. So I thought I would go to those auditions and maybe have a better chance at getting that job first. And I got cut, and then I went back again to another audition and got cut. And so my third audition again was for the actual Radio City Rockettes. And that was while I was on tour with 42nd Street. And I flew from LA to New York to that audition, spent 2 days. It was like 1,000 girls there. They needed 12. And after 2 days, I ended up getting the job.
Those high kicks. I mean, how hard is that to get those kicks right? And what was it in the first two auditions that you think that they give you notes like, well, you know, your heel's to the right too much. I don't know what you do. You're doing something wrong. They tell you what you're doing wrong so you can come back and correct it.
Oh, yeah. Your head was... they'll say like looking to the sun. So like your chin is like, you're looking to the sun, but if it's this way, you're like, you know, your chin was an inch low, so you got to lift it up, or, you know, your pinky was out, so you put it in. I mean, it is so detailed. I mean, it's all about, you know, being uniform. So you have to be like, it's precision dance at its best.
You're like a Marine. So, you're like the Marines. Yeah. It's like everything has to be precise.
Yeah. The goal of the Rockettes is to not stick out, right? You don't want to be an individual. You want to be one of 36. So the hardest thing about the kicks is that you have to kick, it's eye high. So your toe to your eye. So it can't be higher. It can't be lower. that is, so it's not necessarily, it's not like, oh my gosh, is it so hard to kick your do the high kicks. It's more so you have to hit a target that is like right in front of you. That is like a laser beam that no one else can see except, you know, your imagination. And that's, I think that's the hardest part about the kicks.
Was that the, go ahead.
Oh, that in like when I was a Rockette, I did 5 shows in one day. So it was, you know, you're doing, you know, a ridiculous amount of activity.
I mean, I guess the first time you auditioned, you just, it was like you were shit kicking. You were just trying to, in a way, you're probably trying to stand out when you weren't supposed to stand out.
No, well, I knew not to stand out. My first 2 auditions, you have to learn. It's a process. You just, you know, and it's intimidating. You're auditioning at the Grand Hall at Radio City Music Hall. There's a lot of girls. Everybody looks the same because it's, again, about having a certain look and height. So I think it was just about like learning and being confident and getting super sharp in your dancing and, you know, you have to be good. And I wasn't good enough the first 2 times. Then I got good.
Inside of You is brought to you by Netflix. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963. Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition, betrayal, and menacing milkmen, sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Friday, May 3rd, only on Netflix. Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your best seller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Do you remember the conversation when you called your dad and said, "I'm a Rockette"? I'm in the band Roxette.
Yeah, I do. Well, ironically, my parents had flown into New York for the 2 days that I had the audition. And, you know, the first day you go through many cuts. The second day they give you a call back. So you come back, they go through a lot of cuts. My dad picked me up at the stage door at Radio City, and after the second day, we all went to a big family dinner, and he said, "How'd it go?" And I was like, "I think I did good, Dad. You know, I don't know." And I had to fly back the next day to LA to go back on tour with 42nd Street. So I landed at LAX and I was walking off the plane. I saw that I had an email saying, please call us. And I'm walking through LAX. And still to this day, when I pass this spot at LAX airport, I'm like, that's where I found out that I got to be a Radio City Rocket. And I called them immediately afterwards and they were floored. They were so excited.
Was it the biggest achievement? I mean, I guess at that time of your life, was it better than getting 42nd Street? Was it better than anything you had done? Like, I'm a Rockette.
Yeah, you know, that I think that was a huge achievement because 42nd Street was still a national tour. It wasn't like my Broadway debut, which Broadway debut came after Rockettes. But yeah, the Rockettes was a huge, that was a lifelong dream of mine. And that, and like I said, it was 1,000 girls. They needed 12. So that's remarkable. It was a huge accomplishment.
Yeah. Now, I'm not comparing Laker girls to Rockettes, the Rockettes. I'm not going to do that. I'm not saying that. But I know for a fact that Laker girls, do you know every time they go to dance, I think he just gets paid to say Laker girls.
Oh,
that's what he does. I'm like, that's the only thing that guy says, but they don't get paid very much. Like I hear they get paid $100 a night.
Oh, wow.
Now Rockettes, they got to get paid pretty well, right?
No, we are treated so well. You get paid very well. You get, you know, you have beautiful dressing rooms. They have a full like floor of PT for you that, you know, you can go to at any time. Ice baths that we all go into right after the show. They give you scholarship money so that on the off season, you can go to school and further your education. They give you money to, do dance classes so that you can, you know, keep your ability up. It is a very, very good job. 401k, you know, it's wonderful.
What?
They treat you very well.
This is remarkable. I don't think anybody knows any of this. They assume it's probably a low paying job. That's just like they make a lot of money, but the girls don't make a lot of money. But you're saying they treat you right. And did you know what you were getting into in terms of the PT room and all these scholarships and all these thing, you had no idea until you were a Rockette?
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, I was making pennies on the 42nd Street tour, but happy as a clam. And when I got that job, I was like, I make this? Wow. And I get this too. And I can like go to school to get my, you know, yoga certification and teach yoga. Like, oh, cool. And you know, I mean, no, I was 22 years old.
Oh,
I was green as all get out.
How many guys were coming on to you? I mean, a Rockette has to be the coolest thing to say. I'm going out with a Rockette. I mean, you have to be hit on. I mean, obviously you're a very pretty girl anyway, very talented, all these things. Cheers. But to be a Rockette is like, that's like a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader back in the day, right?
Michael, I never really had a lot of boyfriends. I honestly dated a lot. That really did not happen to me too much.
You fall fast is what you're saying. You fall for someone quickly and then that's it. You're a monogamous one guy only girl.
No, you know, I don't think I fall for somebody fast actually. I met my first husband in a show and again, like, I think just like the repetitive seeing somebody every day and then seeing their talent every day and it just became attractive. And then I'm a person that is friendly first and then through friendship, I start to like you.
Huh. I think, well, that's interesting. That's probably the smart thing to do. You get to know someone. I like this person. I like how they make me feel. They make me laugh. They're fun to be around. And then things start to happen.
Yeah, natural, organic, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and then that's how I met Nick too. So, yeah, and I don't know. Now I'm screwed because I'm on a talk show with all women. So,
yeah, the talk.
Well, Jerry O'Connell just joined our show. So
he did because they said that it was the deal was breaking soon. So it broke.
Yes. Yeah, it broke today. Yes.
So now you got a dude on the show, which is probably fun for you because it's like talking to girls wonderful. The whole time probably got boring for you. You do that.
It's wonderful. No, Jerry brings so much energy and I love having, you know, the male energy there and it's great. No, Jerry's the best. I did the Hollywood Bowl with his wife, Rebecca. We did the producers at the Hollywood Bowl together. And then Jerry and I did Crazy for You at Lincoln Center together in New York. So I've known Jerry for a while. So it's wonderful to now be working with him on the talk.
How old were you when you got Bullets Over Broadway, the musical?
I was 31.
So last month. You just got it. Bullets Over Broadway. And that was a big thing for you, right?
Yeah, it was a big deal because it was Woody Allen directing with Susan Stroman and slated to be, you know, the next big, big show on Broadway. I got that job thinking I would be on Broadway for 3 years. I'd be able to have three kids and, you know, have, you know, be able to buy a house.
Were you already divorced when you were doing Bullets?
No, I was still with my first husband and he was doing the national tour of Book of Mormon. So he was leaving for tour as I was starting Bullets Over Broadway. So it was hard because when you're starting a Broadway show, you have no life and you can go nowhere. Traveling is not an option. And then he's on the road on the West Coast leading the Book of Mormon tour, you know, doing a crazy tour schedule. He can't leave either. So we left each other knowing that we wouldn't see each other often and that we were going to be on different sides of the country. And I knew from being on three national tours, like we talked about just a second ago, what tour life is like.
So are you insinuating something happened while he was on tour?
I'm insinuating that tour life is crazy. And my husband was always the life of the party and he's a good guy, but yeah, tour life is crazy.
So that kind of sizzled out after a while. How long did that take before it kind of just, you started hearing things or he was honest with you? How does that work?
There were things in our marriage that had happened throughout our 6 years of being married together. And, you know, you work through them. I never got married to get divorced. So it was always something that, like, you know, we just worked through. And then, you know, tour just accentuated those problems and made everything that we always kind of fought and dealt with even worse. And it's okay now, you know, you look at things retrospectively and it was honestly the best thing that ever happened to me, getting a divorce and going our separate ways. We got married very young. And I think that, you know, we found out that we actually weren't the perfect person for each other and that's okay. You know, it was a very, very hard, awful thing to go through. Oof. I'm not trying to put it lightly because it wasn't at all. But now, retrospectively, I can look back and be like, you know what? It's all good.
How do you put things aside, though, while you're sitting there doing a Broadway show with Woody Allen directing, all these big names, and it's Broadway, and all these things are happening, materializing in front of you. How do you just separate them? How do you go to work and just separate it? How do you do that? That's got to be a mind fuck. Sorry for my language. First F-bomb of the day.
No, it totally is all day. And then you walk into a theater and you put makeup on that makes you look like an accentuated version of yourself. Then you put a wig on, it makes you feel like you're not yourself. And then you put on a really cool costume and then you really don't feel like yourself. And then you're with this whole family that you have an extremely close and different and new relationship with. And then after the show ends, you go to the bar next door and drown your sours because you don't want to go home and sit at your house by yourself. And so then you get drunk and then you repeat the next day. And that was my life. That was how I coped with it.
And what was it like working with Woody Allen? Was he just kind of quiet and distant and just did his job and then left and you didn't really get to talk to him? Like that's how it feels it probably would be like.
Yeah, yes, most of the time. And then you had like the rare occasions where he would come over and do cast notes and you know, you kind of had to like pinch yourself that like Woody Allen's giving cast notes, but he was very quiet. He watched everything, all the previews and always had opinions and things. But yeah, he was very quiet. He did his own thing. He was always, you know, his wife was there and his daughter was there a lot. And they were always, always very kind but quiet for sure.
So Nick Cordero.
Yeah.
When you first met him on Bullets Over Broadway, obviously you're married, you're going through all these things. You probably didn't think anything of it at first, right?
Yeah.
You're just working together. Yeah. There's how many people in this, the show?
Oh gosh, the cast was probably, I don't know, like 25 people.
Right. So when was the first time that you said, huh? Mm. Hmm.
We, you know, I had known Nick because we did the reading of this show. So when a Broadway show conceptualizes, they usually do like a reading like a year before, or sometimes even years before. So I had met Nick before. So when we started rehearsals, yeah, it was nothing. I was happily married, you know, or I thought so, or trying to be so. So I just saw Nick as like, you know, a cool guy in the cast. But also like, you know, Nick was going through his own change. He was a starving actor living in Williamsburg and a friend's, you know, with like three other roommates. I mean, to me, he kind of looked like a big, like a mess a little bit, like a hot mess a bit, but charming and talented and funny and extremely tall. And you can't not look at him when he walks in the room because he's 6'5", dark hair, and like, you know, playing the leading man next to Zach Braff. And so you're like, you know, okay, this guy's interesting. And it was one night we were finishing a preview. No, we had opened the show. So you do previews of a Broadway show, then you have your big opening night, then the show's open. So we had opened the show and we were at the bar next door having, you know, drinks, celebrating. And Nick and I sat down at the bar and we just talked the whole night. And it was just one of those, it's in the book, but it's one of those like movie sequences where like, you see the couple talking at the bar and they're in like real time, but everything around them is happening in like four times the speed. And, you know, it came to be like 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, the bar is almost empty and we're still chatting. And I was like, obviously I had to go. I was teaching fitness in the morning. And I remember walking to the subway being like, oh no, do I like this guy? But exactly what I said, like, that's what happens to me. Like, I'm just friends with friends, friends. And then all of a sudden I like you. So,
yeah. You see everything about the person. You're like, oh, you probably see all the good, the bad. And then, huh, that's interesting. So when, how long did it take before, you know, did he make the first move? Did he kind of say, hey,
no, he had wanted nothing to do with me because what? I was married, you know, and to everyone in the Broadway world, which is a very small world, I was married. I was not letting anyone know that my marriage was falling apart, that things were happening. Certain people in the cast knew, my girlfriends in the cast knew. And that night I confided a lot to Nick about things that were going on. And he was confiding into me about his past relationships. And so we had this like big, like kind of heart to heart, but yeah, nobody knew. And so the last thing Nick wanted to do, and this, you know, Bullets Over Broadway was a huge life changer for him. He got nominated for Tony. Yeah. He was the star of the show, essentially. So he didn't want to get into any scandal, you know? So he was like, he was kind of like, Amanda, you know, I think you're cool, but like also you're married and I can't be seen with a married woman. So even as we slowly started to like hang out, he would always be like, you know, meet me on the corner or something like
that. It was all secretive.
You know? Yeah, because he was so scared to like ruin his reputation at a time where he was finally being recognized in the Broadway community for his artistry.
So he's being respectful is what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, then, you know, yes. which made me just want to be like, you know, no, you know, meet me here. And then it doesn't matter, you know?
So when was it? When was that moment? Do you remember the moment you're like, okay, I think this is going somewhere. We're hanging out a lot. We're talking. Now maybe we can take this moment.
And it's in the book. It's in the book, Live Your Life, which you guys must read.
I mean, she really divulges everything here. And you're that kind of person. And so, look, it's a New York Times bestseller, for Christ's sakes. Read the thing. But go ahead.
No, it was July. We were still doing the show. My marriage was really over. You know, we had talked about, you know, officially kind of separating, taking that break. And Nick took me on a date, like an official, like, okay, this is an official, like first date. And, cause again, you know, when you're doing a show together, you're hanging out a lot, you're right, going to the bar after the show a lot, but none of that's not like a date. You know what I mean? It's not a date at all, but you're hanging out all the time. So he asked me out like on a date, and we took me out to dinner at this beautiful restaurant in Washington Heights. And that was July 6th. So we always celebrated that day as like our first date. And then ironically, you know, he passed away on July 5th. So it's crazy, you know, timing wise, but.
So after that, you kind of knew. You had spent enough time with him. You were friends. You were working together. And after that first date on July 6th, you felt like, hey, this is it. And how fast was it after that that you guys were together? Pretty fast. I mean, pretty fast.
Yeah, pretty fast. But we had lots of issues. We had lots of fights and broke up. Like, definitely broke up 3 times. The last time that we broke up, we both thought it was over. So we fought. We could fight really well together.
What was it? Were you both just kind of the same A personalities in a lot of ways?
No, we were exact opposite. Nick, Nick's like a dreamer and like, you know, I mean, so am I, but in a different way. He's just smoke weed and just kind of like listen to music, lay on the bed, look at the ceiling, kind of, you know, think about things. And, you know, while he's done that for 3 hours, I've taught 10 fitness classes, answered all my emails, and I'm about to create another company.
You know? So you would get upset. You're like, would you get up and go do something? For Christ's sakes, you're just sitting here. Smokey's like, hey, I was nominated for a Tony, so I'm going to sit here for a while and smoke some weed.
Yeah. And, you know, we fought about, I was in a different place in my life. I was going through a divorce. So I had already had 7 years of marriage, and I was looking at my life as like, what am I doing now? I want, you know, I'm on my own now. I've lost that security. I have to create things for myself. I have to figure out how to make money for myself. I want a home one day. I want a family one day. How am I going to make that happen? And yeah, and Nick's career was just starting. So he was kind of just being like, you know, in that mindset. So, and we fought about religion. He was not religious. I was. And so we had a lot of issues.
This sounds amazing how really the love of your life, like how it was meant to be to get together, but like you did fight. It wasn't perfect. It was your opposite people. You were doing two different things. You were getting out of this marriage. I mean, it's pretty incredible how you came together. What made that happen? Was it just like, regardless of the fights, regardless of whatever, there was this underlying love, this sort of, I want to be with you. I want to take care of you, each other.
Yeah. I know. It's funny. I don't know. You know, Nick, when we were dating, he would always say like, we're so different. We should not be together. And I would be like, what do you mean? because we were, it was so different. And, I think there was underlying love. I think, you know, Nick, in the end, our last breakup, his father passed away and got cancer and then ended up passing away. And in his father getting cancer at a young age and passing away, I think it made him really, just kind of realize like, you know, like all of our differences and like the things that we fight about, they can all be like, we can talk through these things. Like, the most important thing is like, I don't want to lose you. And so he came back and kind of was like, you know,
there was conviction in that. There's something different in him. You think that changed when he said those things?
Yeah. A lot of people will say that when you lose a parent, it changes you, especially if it's at a younger age. And, you know, Nick was 39 or 38 when his dad passed and his dad was young and he's the oldest of his siblings and they're very close. They have a beautiful family. And yeah, I think it just helped him to grow up a little bit and see like what he wanted in life, you know?
So tell me if I'm wrong, but you go out to LA, we fast forward things, you know, his father passes away. He has this thought of you're the one, this is it. We've got to do this. You guys are together. You move out to LA. Am I right about this? You stayed at Zach Braff's guest house while you were shopping for a house.
Yeah. Well, we stayed at Zach Braff's guest house because we were still paying rent in our New York City apartment. We were subletting it, but not for the whole amount. And Zach is so generous and he loves us so much that he was like, stay at my house for free and just kind of like get your feet wet. We had a goal of buying a home one day, but it definitely wasn't like we have everything set in place to buy a home. We were just more so it was just like, we're going to stay at Zach's. We can live there for free. We can save our money and see if we like living in LA. And then we happened to find a home that we could barely afford and we bought it.
And how soon after was little Elvis conceived?
Well, Elvis was conceived right before we moved to LA. He was born in June. We moved to LA in September.
Right. So now you got this little munchkin around. You're trying to find a place. You finally got a place. And then things seem pretty damn good at this point.
Yeah. Well, to just give a funny anecdote, when we first moved into Zach's guest house, this 2-bedroom, 2-bath cottage that he owns, he was living there because his main house was being completely renovated.
You know, I live like right around the corner.
Yes.
Anyway, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, as his home was supposed to be finished, but as you know, everybody that's gone through construction knows, if they say it'll be done in May, it'll be done in September.
Mm-hmm.
So his house is running late. So we have our plane tickets. We're coming. Nick is opening Rock of Ages and Zach's like, we're all going to live together for like 2 weeks. So it was me, Nick, Elvis, our two dogs, Zach and his dog, all living in the 2-bedroom, 2-bath guest cottage. Then Zach's girlfriend Florence arrives. And so then it's Zach and Florence, their dog, Nick, Elvis, and I, and our two dogs all living happily together.
I mean, who went crazy first? Had to be Zach.
Ironically, no. Zach loved it. Zach is used to living by himself. And so he all of a sudden had this big family where every night we were cooking dinner and eating together, drinking wine and having a ball. He was like not even wanting to go. Thank God for Florence, because Florence came in and was like, we're moving into your house. These people need their space. We need our space. We're doing this. And so she was a saving grace. I mean, we all actually did get along living together so well, and it was really, really fun. It just was hard with the baby because Nick and I and Elvis were all in one room together. I mean, it was tough, and it was tough on me. I went through a little postpartum, but we actually all did. I mean, you know, again, you look back retrospectively and you're like, oh my God, like that time was so magical that we were all living together at Zach's house. You know?
I always look at those times. I had times where my friend Tom and Deneen stayed with me up while I was filming Smallville, and we lived in a houseboat and they stayed with me for months on end. And those are the happiest times of my life. I feel like, you know, I live alone, you know, I have a dog, but I do get lonely. I'd like to entertain. I like to for people to come over. I like to barbecue and hang out and movie nights. And, you know, my grandmother's always like, when are you going to get someone? When are you going to have a kid? This is the best thing in the world for you. What are you? And I'm like, I'm not doing this just so I can, so to make you happy. That's what I always think. And then I have the kid and then you end up dying. You're 93 years old. I don't want to. And we have these conversations probably every week, but there is a sense of, I don't know what it is, security, some comfort, having people you love around you. And it just that warm feeling that it presents. So
ironically, we all lived together very, very well and really never once had a weird spat. I mean, we all really respected each other's space and had a really great time.
Right.
It was very fun.
So sorry to get a little dark, but like we know the inevitable, but you know, when did this first start where Nick started to get sick and you, I mean, we won't go through it entirely, but like we'll skip over some things, but like, you know, I'm sure you were thinking this is not a big deal in the beginning, correct? Like this is a young guy you never had, you explain.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it was weird. Nick, I think, was a bit of a hypochondriac with sickness. So he was saying from day one, I have this thing is what he kept saying. And because his only symptom was that he was tired, I was like, no, you don't. And it all started on my birthday night. And then, you know, for the next 2 weeks, he basically just slept all day, every day. But yeah, I was not worried about it because I was like, this isn't a symptom of COVID. So you definitely don't have COVID. You can smell, you can taste, you don't have a fever, you're not coughing, you're just tired. I thought he was depressed, which Nick could easily go into, you know, because he's a performer, he's a musician, and everything in that world just got you know, and right. all of our worlds got closed cut off, right. especially that. So, yeah, I didn't think anything of it.
And when did you realize this is something?
I didn't get extremely worried until like the night before I took him to the emergency room. That would have been March 29th. And I got worried because his breathing was really bad. For the first time, I was like, you can't breathe. Like, you're having a hard time, like, walking from the kitchen table to the sofa, which is like 12 feet. Like, that's when I got scared.
Right. And when,
but even when I took him to the emergency room, I was like, I'll pick you up in 2 hours. I was like, I literally was like, I'll just not walk around Third Street with Elvis. I'll pick you up in a couple hours.
And so what did they say? He's in the emergency rooms. Doctor calls you or calls you in?
No,
they called you. They called you. You can't go anywhere. So they call you. Yeah. And what do they say?
Nick called me. The doctor didn't even call me. Nick called me and he said, Amanda, they want to keep me overnight. They're going to put me on some oxygen to help me with my breathing. They want to do some further tests. They're testing me for COVID. And they're keeping me here overnight just to make sure I'm okay. And I was like, oh, okay, gosh. All right. Well, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Again, not being like, I don't know.
And he had no real pre-existing conditions.
Nothing.
I mean, it's just.
He was never sick. Nick never was sick. He was like, if he had a cold, it was like, wow, you have a cold? I mean, he was like, never sick.
So jump ahead when you realize this is really serious. And I can't believe I'm going through this shit.
I didn't think it was really serious until the day that they called and told me that he died on the table for 2 minutes. Because, and I'll say that because the 10 days leading up to that, when he was in the ICU, even though the ICU was scary, every day I was getting reports back from Nick's doctor that he's doing great. We're progress every day. Numbers are looking great. We'll take him off the ventilator on, you know, Thursday. He'll be home by the next Wednesday. Like, doing great, Amanda. Everything's great. And so I was like, okay. So I was, you know, hanging out with Elvis, trying to like be the best single parent I could be, and managing everything at home, trying to manage my fitness business because that was the only thing that was making money for us at the time. So I was just like, you know, great. He'll be home by Wednesday. And boy, this has been crazy, you know, but wow.
So they just keep throwing kind of false hope at you, kind of, well, or maybe not even false hope. They're throwing things at you that this is going to be okay.
That was the truth. He was progressing. Everything was going great. He was going to get off the ventilator. Everything was literally like, if it was on the incline of like, he's going to be completely fine. And then they called the morning of April 10th and said, you know, the exact opposite, that overnight he spiked a fever, his heart stopped, he went into septic shock, and he's on an hour, like a minute-to-minute basis, and every hour counts. We'll let you know. And I was like, that's when I was like, what, you know?
I just got like chills. Like, it just, I'm shocked, and I know the story. I mean, I know what ends up happening. But it's absolutely got to be the most shocking thing to ever hear when you think, okay, my husband's going to be back and things are getting better. And then all of a sudden, hey, this is life. And this is what just happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how long after did it take before he passed?
Well, that was April 10th. And then so July 5th, he passed. So, yeah. Was a good long, it was like around 95 days. I mean, from when he was in the ICU on a ventilator to the day he passed.
And you documented a lot of this on Instagram.
Yeah, I did. I started documenting it when he went into the ICU is when I started documenting it, because I was online every day offering free fitness classes and promoting my fitness business. And it felt like I was leading a double life to just be like on, you know, Insta lives every day being like, okay, guys, here we go. 20 minute workout, smiling and happy. Oy. And then, you know, having my husband in the ICU. So on top of that, also, I was like, my husband's in the ICU with apparently COVID, and his only symptom was that he was sleeping. So I feel like other people should know this in case you're at home sleeping and you don't think you have COVID. So it was, you know, something I decided to go on and share because I just was leading a double life and I wanted people to know that, you know, what was going on with Nick. And I had already had, like, you know, what I thought was a lot of followers at the time. I still do, like 50,000 followers. And I was a very active person on social media anyways, a very honest, like, what's going on in my day kind of person on social media. So, you know, it was just like natural to get on and say what was going on.
Well, I think, yeah.
You know, and then everything exploded.
Well, I mean, to say your inspiration is just, you're on another level. And I think that's why people gravitate towards you, because you have so much positivity, but you also divulge the truth. I mean, you really tell the truth. And I think, you know, that's why people like you. I think you're a great, not only super talented, but like crazy likable. And that's cool. I mean, you know, and one of the questions I thought of was like, you know, what do you do to get through the day? And, but I remember what you said when you were going through a terrible time on Broadway, and then you put your makeup on, you put this, and you, I mean, what do you do? Do you have a routine that, cause you know, people all across the world, they suffer loss every day. And, but hearing you speak, I mean, maybe they'll get something out of it. Like, what is your sort of routine in the morning, or what you do to maybe give you a little bit of sunshine?
I mean, I start every day with a positive thought. I put it on my Instagram. I share it with everybody. It's something I've done now for like 5 years. I just, the first thing I put in my head, I'm a grateful person. Every day I drive to CBS, I say a prayer and just like, thank God for everything that I have in my life. Even if all I can think about that day is that it's sunny, like it's a sunny day. So I try to find those like beautiful things in the day. I exercise a lot because for me, that's like my number one mental health, like stress and anxiety reliever. Put on great music, get my jump rope or start dancing or start doing anything, go on a walk. It just clears my head and puts me in like a different space. And, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of like my go-tos, my three go-tos.
Because you do get anxiety. Do you have anxiety attacks? Do you?
Yes.
And so for you, working out is really what helps you get that heart going, get things moving. You have to do it. If you don't do that, you're going to fall apart.
Yes. 100%. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. You can either sit there and ponder and let your head go, or you can get up, put some music on so it distracts those thoughts, and just like focus on moving your body and using it and breathing and circulating your blood and just, you know, doing things.
What do you do when you start to go down a dark path? When you start to go, oh my God, why me? Why this? All those feelings come up and you just feel like it was yesterday that happened. Probably you feel like that every day. But how do you stop that?
It depends. Sometimes, I'll be honest, I just have to let myself go down that dark path for a smidge. So like the last time that happened was Nick's anniversary. This past, you know, July 5th was a really hard day for me. I spent like the first probably 4 hours in bed. I just was like, I was at the beach. I was in a beautiful resort at Cabo. I put the black shades down and I just cried and laid in bed and felt sorry for myself. Then I was like, okay, I can't do this all day because I'm not serving Nick's memory by doing this. I'm not being a good mom by doing this. I'm not even making myself feel good by doing this. So I did a guided meditation session with a girlfriend of mine, which really, really helped kind of get me out of my funk. And then I went out to the pool and played with Elvis, which got my mind off of things. And then I did some self-care and I got a massage. And I just forced myself to do things that make me happy. Like when Nick passed, it was my goal every day to do one thing a day that made me happy. One. And that's all. If one led to 10, that was great. But if one and I was done and then I went back to crying, at least I did one thing that day that made me happy.
And how often do you hear from Zach Braff?
Oh, all the time. He's my neighbor and, you know, he's one of my best friends in the entire world. We hang out and talk all the time.
Yeah. He's a really good soul.
Yeah, he is.
This has been really amazing. It's been, you know, uplifting at times. And then, you know, it's obviously what it is. I mean, it's a terrible thing that happened. And I just love what you're doing. I have a Patreon account, and so I have these wonderful patrons that get to ask questions. It's called Shit Talking. So these are just rapid fire. You could just be quick. if you can. Sophie M., I see you've joined the talk. Do you have a dream guest you'd like to interview?
Michelle Obama or Julia Roberts or Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston, really? That's a big one. You're a big fan of hers?
Oh, I do. I really like her.
Cindy H., how have your family and friends rallied for you? Any special stories you're comfortable with sharing? Is there one story in particular that you think of when you think of your family or your friends?
Yeah, my really good friends, Molly and Trevor Tuttle and Jono Hart. From day one, when Nick got sick, they knew how important music was to lift your spirits. And they all of a sudden would just show up at like the most magical times. You'll read about it in the book. In Trevor's truck covered in twinkle lights and Jono, you know, arranging Nick's song and just playing songs for us and singing Nick's song and then singing outside our door. I mean, it was like out of a movie. Couldn't write it.
I love it. So the book is Live Your Life. It's a memoir. It's a New York Times bestseller. You guys got to get this. Didn't even scratch the surface of what, you know, she talks about. She's going to talk about in this book, or that she does write about in this book. Leanne P says, I think this sums it up. You are a kind and beautiful woman, both inside out. You bring joy to so many. And I just want to say thank you for spending the time with me. I really appreciate it. And I feel like I got to know you a little bit. So thank you. And all my best to you and Elvis and the family and your friends and your career. I wish you the absolute best. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me today.
Finally, I got you on
here.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed that interview. Amanda was wonderful, wasn't she?
She's very nice, yeah.
Great story about the Rockettes, which I kept saying Roxette. What are you going to do? I do that. I tend to mix up words. I think we all do that every once in a while, don't we?
Roxette.
Well, Roxette was a band in the 80s, which we talked about, but it wasn't. Yeah. She was in the Rockettes. She's done so much, and she's so inspirational, and her Instagrams are pretty wonderful. She's great.
Yeah.
If my mom met her, she'd say, why don't you marry her? I'm like, well, I mean, you know, I don't. My grandmother would say the thing. Why are you single? Why are you 49? Why are you still single? You're a great guy, Michael.
They ask, why are you 49?
Yeah. Why are you 49?
Why?
Like, I have a choice. Thank you again for listening to the podcast. Again, if you want to follow us on the Instagram, Twitter, and all that stuff, it's at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter. You can watch the show on YouTube. I appreciate you guys writing a review, watching, listening, all that stuff. And also, if you want to go to the online store, it's the Inside of You online store. You can get tons of merch, Funko Pop, Lex Luthor things. There's just so much you could get on there. Just take a look. It's a lot of fun. And also my band, sunspin.com. You could book a Zoom with me, for God's sakes. And you could book the band and get cool merch there. And lastly, but not leastly, is the Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/insidey if you want to join. Help the podcast out a little more. It really helps. If you're enjoying this and you want to help a little more, there's nothing like it. patreon.com/insidey. Also, I should mention, I'm going to be at Dragon Con in Atlanta September 4th, that weekend, the Saturday and Sunday. And then September 11th weekend, I will be in Lexington, Kentucky. And September, I believe, 24th, I check me on that, but I'll be at the Mountaineer Con in West Virginia. So three cons coming up in September. Just me, check my Twitter at Michael Rosenbaum, because I didn't have enough for the letters Baum, so I had to put Rosenbaum. Right. What the hell's that about? Let's get into it. Let's read the top Patreons. These are people who give a little bit more and substantially help the podcast. Nancy D, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Mama G, Nico P, Jerry W, Robert B, Jason W, Apothean, Kristen
K.
Gosh, yeah, I could just throw that at him. He just nails it. Amelia O, Allison L, Raj
C,
Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Jennifer N, Stacy L, Jen S, Jamal F, Janelle
B,
Kimberly E, Mike E, El Don
Supremo,
99 more, Ramirez, Santiago M, Sarah F, Chad W, Leon P, Janine R, Ray A, Maya P, Maddie S, Shannon D, Matt W, Belinda N, James R, Chris H, Dave H, Spider-Man,
Chase,
Sheila
G,
Brad D, Ray H, Tabitha T, Tom N, Liliana A, Michelle K, hi, Michael S, Talia M, Betsy D, Claire M, Laura L, Chad L, Rochelle, Nathan E, Marion E, Meg K, Janelle P, Trav L, Dan N,
Ojeda. Lorraine G, Veronica K, Big Stevie W, Kendall T, Carol D, Angel M, Rhiannon C, Corey K, Super Sam, Emily C, Coleman G, Dev Nexon, Michelle A, Liz L, Jeremy C, Andy T. A few more left here of the top tier patrons that get their name read off at the end of every episode, and they're wonderful and they really help the podcast. Cody R, Sebastian K, Gavinator, Ann H, David C, Elliot M, John B, Brandy D, Yavor, Camille S, Bono or Bano. Hi, Bano. I messed it up, didn't I? The C. Joey M and PT Scarborough. Those are the top tier patrons, folks. And
I didn't know we had an oil baron.
Yeah, is that what it was? Yeah, the PT Scarborough. That's a, what a name that is. You're gonna be, you got to be really rich to have that name, I think. I love doing this. I love you guys listening. I've been doing it for a while now. I love all the support. I love all the messages. I may not get back to all your messages right away. It takes me some time. I'm busy, as I know you are, but I certainly appreciate the support and are aware of all of you listening and watching and all that. So keep listening. Tell your friends, email them, text them, make sure they listen and watch the show. From the Hollywood Hills in
Los Angeles, California.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, waving to that camera up there.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm waving at the camera.
I'm waving up to the camera. You guys are great. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you. I hope you have a glorious week. And much love to you. All right.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot.
But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a three-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.